This reflection is one of a series on Jesus' parables, and you can watch them on YouTube as well. This one is found in Luke chapter 12. It reads as follows. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.'" But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself?" This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. She hit the headlines in late 2015, but for all the wrong reasons. The Court of Protection ruled in favour of socialite C, identity withheld. Treatment for life-saving kidney dialysis could be refused. Socialite C must be allowed to die. She was 49 years old, had been married 4 times, and was a self-confessed serial adulteress. She had 3 daughters, of whom the youngest was still a teenager. The judge described her as an entirely reluctant and at times completely indifferent mother. The court was told that when one daughter revealed she was pregnant, C had become angry because she would be a grandmother, and that made her feel past her sell-by date. For years, C had lived a life of luxury, combining reckless spending with excessive drinking. She delighted in her youthful figure and her Mediterranean beach holidays. Incredibly, she even had a full-length mirror installed in the ladies' lavatory of her favourite gourmet restaurant. But everything changed for C 18 months before her premature death, when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. Chemotherapy was refused in case she put on weight. Within months, her latest relationship ended, her business collapsed, and her home was reclaimed. Her world fell apart. She took the decision to end it all. Consistent to the end, she washed down 60 paracetamol tablets with a bottle of expensive champagne. Her suicide attempt, however, was unsuccessful, though it resulted in serious liver and kidney damage. The doctors assured her there was hope. With regular dialysis, the prognosis was good. Alas, even with the imminent prospect of a first grandchild to look forward to, C left her family, the doctors, and the court in no doubt about her choice. She had, quote, "no desire to live in a council flat, be poor and ugly." Permission to sigh. A mini media storm followed in the wake of her death, and some of our more thoughtful journalists posed the question, What did the case, the tragic case of Socialite C, reveal about the society we'd become? Hadn't the lady in question merely come to embody, albeit in shockingly concentrated form, the messages that our society sends out? For there was absolutely no doubt that Socialite C really did believe that life was about wealth and looks and success and entertainment and image. Life did consist in those things. We're all familiar with the saying, where there's a will, there's a way. There's a tweak on that that's popular within the legal profession. Where there's a will, there's a family dispute. And that's what accounted for the interjection which came from a member of the crowd while Jesus was teaching. Others may have been interested in hearing what Jesus had to say about sin and judgment and forgiveness, for that's what he had been talking about. But this individual had a more pressing concern, and he had a different role in mind for this popular teacher with clout. He wanted to appoint Jesus to the role of family solicitor and financial advisor. The man was clearly aggrieved at the proposed settlement of the family estate and his portion of it. Well, Jesus pointed out that the matter didn't fall within his remit, but refused to leave it there. He addressed the unspoken motivation that lay behind the man's request and issued a sharp warning in light of it. Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. Jesus is warning that if we're not careful, we could find ourselves seduced by greed and controlled by covetousness. We could make the catastrophic error of reducing life to the pursuit of possessions. The danger with possessions is their power to possess. Therefore, with so much at stake, Jesus told the parable of the rich fool. Now, in an agriculturally dependent society, this was as good as it got. A bumper harvest had generated a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The farmer faced the most pleasant of problems with his full fields and his overflowing barns. Jesus will label the man a fool, but there wasn't anything wrong with his grasp of economics. The problem was economics' grasp of him. We get to eavesdrop on the farmer chatting with himself. And it's interesting to note what was absent from this internal dialogue. There was neither gratitude to God nor concern for others. There would be one beneficiary from this unexpected windfall. No one else featured in his calculations. I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. The rich man said two things to himself in his jackpot situation. The first was, I'm secure. He was absolutely convinced he had all the capital necessary to underwrite his future. Life was never going to be anything less than comfortable. It's what millions in our world dream of. But as people who know the rest of the story, we see the fatal flaw in his plans for the future. What future? And wealth can be a terribly deceptive thing. It has a peculiar ability to create the illusion of security. Because it grants increased access, power, and status in this world, it can delude a person into thinking that it's delivering more than it is. It generates a false confidence and disguises our fundamental weakness. It dulls our sense of need. The second thing the farmer said to himself was, I'm going to enjoy myself. It's pamper time. Exclusive restaurants, expensive wines, the best seats at the best shows, all lay within reach. It was time to dig out the passport, order some foreign currency, and dust off the bucket list. The possibilities were enough to make his heart miss a beat. Before the day would be over, it'll have missed more than one. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who'll get what you have prepared for yourself? Now it's worth hearing that again. God calls this man a fool. This was the divine epithet written over his life. According to the Bible, it's the essence of foolishness to make our calculations in life without reference to God. Psalm 14, verse 1. The fool has said in his heart, there's no God. Any approach to living that does not factor in the reality of God, the certainty of death, and the eternity that awaits is supremely short-sighted and ultimate folly. As the sun rose in the sky the following day, the rich farmer's plans stood as witnesses to what a fool he had been. For all the apparent security and endless possibilities of his situation, when God called time, he left it all behind. Everything. Everything he had wrapped his life around, everything he had drawn his security from and banked his future on, all gone. He left it all at the exit. And Jesus adds, and this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God. For socialites see, circumstances conspired to deprive her of what she lived for, and so she chose death. For the rich farmer, it was death, sudden and uninvited, that denied him of all he was looking forward to in life. For both, life consisted in the abundance of possessions and all that accompanied it. Again, according to the Bible, that's not only a tragic perversion of life, it's also a deadly distortion of reality. In fact, it's a denial of what it is to be human. Sooner or later, we've all got to ask, who are we? What are we here for? And if we don't get that right, we'll simply invent our own version of reality and our place within it. The case of socialite C is undoubtedly extreme, but the worldview that underpinned her understanding of life is now decidedly common. We're here today and gone tomorrow, so we'd better make the most of the limited time we've got. millions have bought into the assumptions of philosophical materialism. We are matter, but in the end, we don't matter. Life, it's just to be lived. And if you're lucky, the chips will fall favorably for you. Is that what it is to be human? Is that the value of a person? Is that the meaning of life? The Bible challenges such a bleak understanding of human identity. It presents us with the facts of our existence. It upholds our essential dignity as people created in the image of God and designed for relationship with Him. But it explains the enigma we have become as God's image bearers. Through sin, that is our declaration of independence from God, we have become dysfunctional. We're estranged from God. We live as spiritual orphans in this world. And every life bears witness to this tension. Without the companionship of our Creator, we seek to fill the void and find fulfillment where we can. We cultivate our God substitutes, other relationships, life's various activities, worldly possessions, anything that'll give meaning to our lives and fill our souls. We award ultimate significance to things and relationships which aren't ultimate and which can't bear the weight we place upon them. Our lives become idol factories. This world becomes our horizon. Something's missing. Someone is missing. And this is where sin is so deceptive. Our divine replacements can give the illusion of filling the soul and making sense of life. The rich farmer didn't leave this world as a sad sinner. By all accounts, socialite C was the life and soul of the party for as long as the party lasted. The Bible doesn't teach that sinners are trailing themselves through life, wondering what's missing. Many are dangerously unaware of the divine vacuum at the core of their being. Both they and their lives feel full. Alas, there'll come that moment when the deceptiveness of sin is laid bare. For at the point of death, all God's substitutes will be stripped away. Earthly relationships will come to an abrupt end. Life's pursuits will cease in an instant, and every worldly possession will be left behind. All that remains is the soul, an empty soul, and a soul that will carry the unending realization that God, who alone could satisfy our deepest yearnings, now never will. Whatever else the experience of hell will be, it will be one of unrelenting anguish of soul, eternal emptiness. So listen again to Jesus. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. In hearing again his word of warning, please don't miss his message of hope. Jesus is saying, we don't have to play the fool. there's a different way to live. And there's a different way to die. An alternative ending to life in this world is possible. There are riches that death can't affect and that won't be left behind. And they're found in a life lived in restored relationship with God. The message of the Bible is one of hope and restoration for sinners through Jesus Christ. God hasn't given up on those he formed for fellowship, even in the face of our rebellion. And through the cross of Jesus, he has provided the way back into relationship with himself and back to life as it was intended to be. Jesus said, "I have come that they might have life, life in all its fullness." John 10:10. Don't be like the foolish farmer. Don't be like socialite C, even a heavily watered down version. Be rich toward God through Jesus Christ. Respond to his offer of real life that not even death itself can touch.